chug, 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 chug,
Hello and welcome back to the Wizard Staff. I'm your host, Sky.
And I'm Blake.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when you're talking about children's card games. We're coming back to a, I don't want to say fan favorite, because I don't know what our fans typically enjoy, but it's a favorite series of mine and Blake's where we talk about our pet cards. And we have done a cycle of colorless and all five colors, talking about what are some of the cards we enjoy most in each of those aspects. But now we're going to get into what are the cards that we like in the different subtypes. So you have creatures, artifacts, enchantments, lands, planeswalkers, sorceries, and instants. Mm-hmm. And tonight, we are dedicating this to our biggest enchantment slut, Blake.
Yeah.
Blake enchantments.
Give me all those enchantments, baby. Yes. I love it.
Yeah. Alright, so just a quick reminder. All the cards that we list will be under $25. They have to follow the card type chosen, so tonight being enchantments. They cannot be a card that we've actually already talked about, so no cards. We'll talk about what those were in a moment. And just also for the clarification, these aren't necessarily what we think the best enchantments are.
Right.
But they are definitely cards that we just like to play with, whether or not they actually bring us, you know, to a winning game. We do have some pretty good cards on here, though.
In our opinion, yeah. But, Guy, what are we drinking first? Because we drink every episode.
Well, tonight I'm drinking a cup of coffee and
what?
Antibiotics, because I was recently bit by a cat and I'm on some medication, and I don't think mixing alcohol and drugs are the best idea. So,
but alcohol already is a drug?
Yeah, but you don't mix the two.
Oh, you know? Okay. Okay, sure enough.
It specifically says it on my bottle.
Okay, that's actually very responsible of you. Alright, well, to compensate, I am drinking two different beers. I am drinking Jeremiah Johnson Mountain Man Scotch Ale, made in Great Falls, Montana. And then in the second half of this episode, or whenever I run out of the first can, I am going to drink the...
Give it like 5 minutes, guys.
Yeah, 5 minutes probably. It's already happening. Bodhisattva India Pale Ale in Seattle, Washington. Never heard of it, which is a surprise since I've been to both of these places. I need to get out more.
What's the first one kind of taste like for you? Is it strong? Is it like bitter? Sweet? Is it hoppy?
It's a hoppy. It's like 6.5% and it's a Scotch Ale. So, tastes pretty good.
Alright, pretty good. And in the spirit of enchantments, just want to quickly remind everyone, we are doing our Rhystic Study giveaway, where I've done an altar on Rhystic Study of the lo-fi hip-hop chill girl, and you can enter to win this once we hit 200 subscribers on YouTube. And that's where we're going to be counting our subscriber count, just in case if you are subscribed somewhere else, please go subscribe to our YouTube channel, and then once we hit 200, we'll notify the winner.
And I think that's going to be pretty soon, because we've actually gotten a lot of people lately. So if you're new to this podcast, hello! Thank you for joining us.
Yes, hello and thank you for the support. We are actually much closer to 200. We are getting closer to 200 much quicker than it took us to get to 100, which feels great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, we're going to start off with, what are enchantments? Blake, take it away.
Alright, so I'm just going to give us all a quick rundown. Maybe some of you listening are like brand new and just kind of need to learn what enchantments are. So, basically, enchantments represent persistent magical effects that last indefinitely. So, enchantments are a permanent that usually have a static or triggered ability. Like, sometimes they'll have an activated ability, but they're usually static or triggered abilities. An important side note, enchantments function very similar to colored artifacts, but the main distinction is flavor and what cards can destroy it. As a general rule, artifacts can sometimes tap themselves if they have a certain type of activated ability, but enchantments almost never tap themselves. Instead, they grant some other permanent the ability to tap itself. So, small little distinction there. What else? Enchantments were originally either global or local, but those were removed from the rules and eroded during 9th edition. So that feels like a long time ago. What else? There are sometimes enchantment creatures and enchantment artifacts. Like, they are both of those permanent types at the same time. So every once in a while you get something pretty cool.
That's typically on the Theros block, right?
Right.
We'll see those combination because it's such a enchantment heavy set. And I actually believe the only time the enchantment artifacts have been a thing was when they did the main weapons for the 5 main gods on Theros.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, and I think they actually did that specifically for flavor reasons. It wasn't so much of like a mechanically unique thing, but they were just like, fuck it, we'll do it. But
right.
I think it works well for that set, as since, you know, constellation or enchantments matter, themes are so prevalent.
Right, and there aren't very many of these cards, so... Again, you're correct. Like, most of them are in the Theros sets. Let's see. White and green are the two colors that are the most supportive of enchantments. And funny enough, they are also the best at removing enchantments. So you got stuff like Austere Command. You got Back to Nature. You got Disenchant, Cleansing Nova, Sylvan Reclamation, Bane of Progress, Elvish Reclamation. Then... you got other stuff like Feed the Swarm, which is like that new black spell from Zendikar Rising. You got like Broken Bonds, Akroma's Vengeance, Aura Blast, Back to Nature, blah 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 blah, etc. There's a lot of different stuff, but a lot of the removal is in white and green.
Yeah, they've said that black is going to become the tertiary color to deal with enchantments, meaning that you're not going to see it probably in every set, some kind of like just basic destroy target enchantment or something. It'll be more so like every few sets here and there, and there will probably also be downsides to it as well, since Feed the Swarm is like one in a black and destroy target enchantment and then you lose life to the CMC.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So.
Yes. So, one last thing before we actually get to our top five. We have to do honorable mentions, and these are the previously mentioned pet cards from our previous sets of pet card episodes. So for me, I have already previously mentioned in those lists Mana Barbs, Spell Shock, Stolen Strategy, Stranglehold, Archetype of Endurance, Bonds of Mortality, Vernal Equinox, Abundance, Omniscience, and Sigarda's Aid. You know I really love enchantments because like 10 of the 25 pet cards are enchantments.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I was just kind of like doing the math in my head, and I was like, oh my, his list is much longer than mine is here.
Yeah!
Because I have Purphoros, God of the Forge, who is also a creature, Cream of the Crop, Darksteel Mutation, and Endless Horizons as my honorable mentions. And I just was telling Blake about this, but... some of the cards that he has on his mentions, I actually really enjoy now myself. And so, it kind of sucks because I can't talk about, like, Mana Barbs or Spell Shock. Those were two that I was definitely looking forward to talking about until he wrote down this list of what he's done before. And I was like, oh, alright, I guess not.
It's okay, we still have plenty of good cards to talk about, right?
Oh yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so I'll get this show started with my number 5, which is Aura of Silence. It costs 1 white, artifact and enchantment spells your opponents cast cost 2 more to cast, and then it has an activated ability of sacrifice itself, destroy target artifact or enchantment. So let's talk about that first part that says artifacts and enchantment spells your opponents cast cost 2 more to cast. Like, this is just really backbreaking because it only affects your opponents. It only hurts your opponents. So, like, you can still play your artifacts and enchantments at their normal mana cost. So all of your opponents are being slowed down while you're just kind of racing ahead with your own stuff. And 2 mana really does add up, especially considering how a lot of decks in this format just like to run artifact and enchantments. They don't even necessarily need to be artifact enchantment themed at all. Like, just a lot of decks on average play artifacts and enchantments, so it just really slows them down, especially if like your opponents are using mana rocks as their ramp package. This just says like, fuck you, ha ha ha, like good luck ramping now. Like, they just kind of get screwed over. And that second ability of like sacrificing itself to destroy target artifact or enchantment is really nice because it can be used at instant speed to remove an artifact or enchantment. And I can't tell you how many games that has saved me from losing the game completely. I think one example a lot of our listeners may be more familiar with due to its popularity is the Game Nights episode. I think it's number 5. It's with the professor and Melissa De Tora. And Melissa uses it to destroy her own thing to save her from getting screwed over. It's a really awesome moment, and go check that out. But like, I have my own memories of it. Like, I remember going to an LGS and someone's playing like Niv-Mizzet, and they assemble the Curiosity combo setup, and I blew up their Curiosity in response to the draw trigger, which kept us all from fucking losing and dying. And I just have so many of those kinds of stories that I'm just like, nope, fuck you, we're not losing here. And they just are like, wait, I didn't even realize it could do that. And I'm like, yep, fucker, I'm still in this. Let's go.
I definitely run it in one of my decks as well. It's nice. I more so do it, though, for the kind of like stacking effect, because it's in mono white and it just kind of brings people down to my level, since, you know, white's not the best at ramping. And now, you know, people have to kind of like play around it a little more. They have to, they probably only get to play 1 or 2 cards instead of, you know, just going all out.
Yeah, you're probably slowing them down to like more like your speed if you're in a mono white deck.
Right. All right, so my number 5, so we're going backwards, 5-1, is Citadel of Pain. It's 2 and a red. It's an enchantment, obviously. At the beginning of each player's end step, Citadel of Pain deals X damage to that player, where X is the number of untapped lands they control. I recently just made an altar of this card in favor of my new favorite villain in Naruto, Pain. It was very thematically fitting, so it has even a more special place in my heart now. But this is great because it forces your opponents to have to consider whether to hold up mana during the rotation or to like tap down and not take any damage. And yes, you're probably only getting 2 or 3 damage at a time, but in the deck that I run it in, which is Purphoros, if you haven't put it together already, you're already taking maybe 6 to 8 damage on my turns from what I play. So, 2 or 3 damage can definitely be life or death in some situations. And I mean, this also kind of like helps stop interaction on other players' turns. I think the best other comparison I can think of is Price of Glory, which is also an enchantment and kind of follows the same idea as Citadel of Pain. When you tap a land during another player's turn, they have to sack it. So, I guess there's 2 for my number 5.
Cheating Step already. It up, Blake. I like it. yeah, like, this is definitely an interesting card. It kind of changes the nature of the game. Well, I shouldn't say that, but it definitely hurts any deck that's looking to use, like, that's just looking to be a bit more controlling, you know, or looks to interact at, like, instant speed, just, like, flash things out, or I can think of a number of my decks that are more controlling, and this just really fucks them over. And there's other decks that I have, which, like, oh, I'm used to just, like, tapping out each turn, I don't care about this. So, it definitely seems a little very hit or miss, like, it definitely, like, screws over the people it screws over, and it is the other decks that are used to tapping out all the time don't notice. So I like it though, because typically the people who are like doing instant speed stuff are usually, that's generally speaking, better. So it's like it's slowing them down. I like it.
Yep, for sure. All right, your number four.
My number four, all right, is Ancestral Mask. It is 2 and a green. It's an enchantment aura. So you enchant a creature, and enchanted creature gets +2/+2 for each other enchantment on the battlefield. Notably, this does count your opponent's enchantments too, not just your own. So this basically makes a creature you have, well, I guess you could put it on like your opponent's creatures, but what you do is you put it on your own creature and it gets fucking huge. And I play this like in my Sigarda Host of Herons enchantment Voltron deck. And I think the record I have is like +46/+46 just off of this card alone. And if that isn't like just true magic in its like most raw form, I don't know what fucking is. And it's just like, it's great. Like, I just, obviously, like, you want to put this in a deck that has tons of enchantments. You don't want to put it in a deck with only a few enchantments, but in the right deck, this is just like, oh, 3 mana? +46/+46? Yeah, this thing is pretty nice.
I mean, that's much more, that's better value than, like, Colossification at that point.
Yeah, like, dude, I love Colossification, but, like, oh, like, it's got nothing on Ancestral Mask, dude.
And, I mean, I'm reading this and it says each other enchantment on the battlefield. It's not even the ones that you control specifically.
So yeah, dude.
You're also playing against, like,
a... That's what I'm saying.
...opponent whip. Yeah. So, pretty good.
Yeah.
Alright. My number four is Unspeakable Symbol. 1 black-black enchantment. It has pay 3 life. Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. This definitely feels like an underrated or like underused enchantment pump, in my opinion.
Guy, we said this wasn't going to be an underrated list.
No, it's not going to be a top. It's not going to be like a top list. It's not going to be like the best ones ever.
Oh my god.
But it just kind of feels crazy because we are in a format with 40 life. And you can just instant speed pump up your creatures to be large enough to deal the necessary damage that they need to deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing too about this is the counters aren't going to go away at the end of the turn. It's not like give +1/+1. There are physical counters that go on the card. They don't go away, which is really great. And especially in other decks where you have effects that either proliferate or, you know, doubling season, those kind of things. Paying 3 life, get +2/+2, you know, just pump up your creatures. I specifically play this in the Skithrex deck that I have, which is great because, you know, I only need to do 10 damage. So paying 3 life to at least try and get +6 more isn't terrible, especially if that means that I'm killing that player this turn.
I will admit that being an instant speed effect is nice, and it only costing 3 mana to cast is also pretty nice.
Yeah, I'd love to see this card reprinted with some cooler art, I guess.
Oh, you don't like the like weird, like, obese, I don't know what that is in the art.
It's like an ogre or something. It doesn't look like it's, I don't know, it, and I don't know. I can just imagine like some kind of, oh, that just made me think of a ultra idea where, you know, you got like Sasuke And
oh my god.
You got his shoulder with the curse mark from Orochimaru. Most of the altars I'm doing now are just Naruto related.
I don't know what's worse, the fact that like you're such a weeb or the fact that I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh, shit.
So,
all right,
it's like looking in a mirror. You're a weeb too.
Moving right along, we're going to move to my number three, which is Stony Silence. It costs one and a white, and it says activated abilities of artifacts can't be activated. So notably, this effect is also on Collector Oof and Null Rod. And this effect is kind of hard to understand for like people brand new to the game of Magic. And even some like longtime players kind of struggle with this effect and like what does this exactly mean? You know, it's this small line of text, but like what does it actually do? So it does like a lot. It like stops mana rocks, most notably for tapping for mana. So like your Soul Ring, your Signets, your Talismans, all your other mana rocks, basically don't tap for mana anymore. You're kind of fucked. It stops equipment from attaching because the equip cost is an activated ability. So your Swiftfoot Boots, Lightning Greaves, Skull Clamp, all those sort of X and Y cards, they all don't work. They can't be equipped. It also stops instant speed sac outlets like Altar of Dementia, Phyrexian Altar, Ashnod's Altar, and Kark Clan Ironworks because they are technically activated mana abilities, but they're still technically activated abilities of an artifact. So, doesn't fucking work, dude. it stops just a lot of other things. It stops like cards like Sensei's Divining Top, Aetherflux Reservoir, Wishclaw Talisman, Isochron Scepter, Birthing Pod, Walking Ballista, etc., etc., etc. It stops a lot of fucking things, dude. Like, so I'll have this in play, and like, my opponents will cast an artifact, and like, I just think to myself, all right, half the time, Stony Silence is just going to like say, nope, that doesn't work anymore. So like, I look at the card, the artifact that they just played, and I'm like, oh yeah, that works. Or they play it, I'm like, no, that doesn't fucking work. And then they're like, wait, why? And then I usually have to explain why. And it's just, I can't explain like all the things that this card shuts off. It just like says fuck you to so many cards. It's amazing.
I would say that most artifacts tend to have an activated ability on them, whether that's equip or having to tap.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
The best way to think about the difference between the activated abilities, knowing what that means, is just if it requires some kind of like physical action or requiring you to do something.
Yeah, it's a cost, a colon, and then an effect. That's how to think of it. Cost, colon, effect.
Gotcha. Alright. Pretty good. I mean, this definitely turns down a lot of the decks that are also Voltron, but don't rely on enchantments because can't equip anything now, so good card.
Yep.
Alright, we got number 3, Oblivion Crown. It's one in a black. It's an enchantment aura, so that means you specifically are casting it onto a creature. It's not that it's going down and it's like a global effect necessarily. It's only relating to a creature, which I don't think we've talked about the different types of enchantments there are, but there's not too many.
No.
Alright, but it has flash, so you can cast this spell anytime you could cast in an instant. You'll enchant a creature, and the enchanted creature has discard a card. This creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So it's a little different from Unspeakable Symbol, since it's just +1/+1, no counters. But this is a card I only get to run in my Gitrog deck. And even though I haven't played that deck in a long time, this was one of my favorite cards for the art. The art's pretty sick. It's a guy like screaming, and he has like these horns that are being dug into him, and it's great because it provides the instant speed discard outlet that helps the Dakmor Salvage combo, where it's a land with dredge that you then get to pretty much draw your whole deck at that point. And I also really enjoyed this card just because it was really hard for me to get, And not in the sense of like, yeah, so the first time I ordered it, it never came. The second time I ordered it, I think it got mixed up in the mail with my apartment and they weren't able to locate it. So I had to order it 3 times. Luckily, it's not an expensive card, so I didn't really get too upset about it.
Yeah, it's like 25 cents.
And I was... Well, I also was going for the foil, like...
Oh, I see.
Are you telling me you don't own all of these cards that we're talking about in foil? Or some altered capacity?
Don't look at me.
I mean, I would have thought you being the enchantment slut would have, you know, all the blinged out bling. Come on. So yeah, Oblivion Crown's a pretty good card.
Yeah, no, like, you know, it's bad for me to say, but I didn't realize that you're correct. Like, the crown is, like, literally digging into the dude's head. I never realized that before. You should really pay attention to the art, everybody. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I definitely think, you know, as you play more EDH, you realize, especially if you go up in, like, the power level scales, that the graveyard becomes more and more important. And just being able to discard at instant speed with, like, no cost, like, is just really good. Like, in the right decks. Not every deck, but, like, in the right decks that are, like, using the graveyard in a certain way, like, guy, your Gitrog monster deck, it's very powerful.
I mean, it's not even really my deck, per se. I do not want to take credit for building it, because it's hardcore net deck.
Okay,
the
true.
The fact that, like, other people are telling me, like, here are all the cards to make it as powerful as it can be. And I'm like, okay, you want me to buy Allosaurus Shepherd for $100? I'll do it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that card's expensive. All right, I'm going to move on to my number 2, and it is Words of Wind. It costs 2 and a blue. And then it has an activated ability of paying 1, and the next time you would draw a card this turn, each player returns a permanent they control to its owner's hand instead. So this was part of a 5-color cycle in Onslaught set, and this is a pretty fucking weird card, dude. Like, this is in my Tuvasa the Sunlit deck that I'm going to build in paper one day after I can go to the shop and actually enjoy playing it. Like, the first thing I do is I make infinite mana with Pemmon's Aura or Freed from the Reel on a Faebro Elder or Bloom Tender. You know, you just tap, untap, tap, untap, and you make infinite green and white mana or whatever. And then I infinitely balance a permanent that says ETB draw a card by paying the 1 each time, because again, I'm floating infinite mana. And so you'll end up infinitely bouncing this single card that says ETB draw card, and your opponents will have to bounce every single permanent on their board state, including their lands, to their hand. And, like, they usually just scoop it up after that, because it's like, wow, I don't have any lands, I don't have anything on the board, and my Blake over here just has all of his permanents, I'm just going to scoop. And, like, it's pretty cheesy, and, like, you can totally use it for, like, incremental value, too. Like, if you're not ready to win just yet, because it's kind of like a win condition in that deck, but if you're not ready for that, you can use it for incremental value. Just keep in mind that your opponents can choose what they bounce back to their hand, so, like, I do think that this card takes a certain amount of skill to play, and I really like it, just because it's fucking weird, dude, and the art is fucking dank. Like, it's just this dude being attacked by, like, sentient pages of a book. It's fucking weird. And he's got, like, a monobrow. I don't know. It's weird.
I'm looking it up now because I wanted to know what the others were in the cycle. So you got Words of Wind, which is the blue one. You got Words of Waste, which is the black one. And that says, next time you would draw a card, each opponent discards a card from his or her hand instead. So that's kind of the thing is, they all have a 1 activated ability that then says, the next time you draw a card, do X. So, yeah. Words of Waste is the black one. Words of Wilding is the green one. Next time you draw a card, put a 2/2 green bear creature into play instead. White is Words of Worship. Next time you would draw a card, gain 5 life instead. And Words of War, next time you would draw a card this turn, deals 2 damage to target creature or player instead. And of the cycle, at least the blue and the black one feel like the 2 best for playing.
Yeah, because I know Words of Waste, the black one, is like in Tiny Bones decks, certain Tiny Bones builds. But yeah, dude, it's really weird, right? You don't really see this kind of activated ability on an enchantment anymore.
I mean, it almost kind of reminds me of Confounding Conundrum a little, just because that specifically hits the lands.
Yeah, like it can't hit lands. It can hit lands. It says a permanent, including lands.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So my number 2 is Luminarch Ascension. It's 1 and a white enchantment. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if you didn't lose life this turn, you may put a quest counter on Luminarch Ascension. Damage caused, loss of life. And then it has an activated ability. For 1 and a white, create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. Activate this ability only if Luminarch Ascension has 4 or more quest counters on it.
Mm-hmm.
In a game where, you know, you have multiple opponents and they each are taking their own end steps before it comes back to your turn, you're gonna probably get this quest counter thing to go off. I definitely see this as, like, I see it quite often, actually, where, you know, players won't even, like, acknowledge it, really, until I am creating a bunch of angels, which is nice. And, I mean, 4/4 white angel creature tokens, instant speed, for only 1 in a white. It's pretty...
pretty cost effective.
It's pretty... yeah, the value of that you are getting for that is pretty nice. So, yeah, I would definitely rank this... yeah, I mean, I'm ranking this pretty high on my list for good reason.
I agree that, like, if there's any format of Magic that this card is going to be played, it's going to be Commander, because of the fact that it says each opponent's end step. I don't actually own this card, because I just don't really have a home for it in any of my decks, but, you know, if I ever build a deck that wants to, like, make a bunch of, like, maybe like 4/4 angel tokens and like just go wide, maybe I'll buy it. Like, I love enchantments, so like I don't think it's that expensive either. So all of these cards are under $25.
No, it's not that expensive. All these cards are definitely for good value. This, I mean, when I was playing with my friends pre-pandemic, there was kind of a joke that like this card came up too much, and they would always think that this was, like, hidden in my sleeves or something. Because it's also, like, 1 and a white. It's great for early games as well. Like, if I get to play this on turn 2, I probably will be getting my quest counters to go off, just because nobody has anything that's gonna either be attacking just yet, or... nobody's going to be having anything to attack yet, and so go around again. So it does invite people to want to hit you eventually, but I don't know. More times than not, I've gotten this thing to go off than play it and then not get the 4 quest counters.
Right, and yeah, like if this doesn't become active within the first rotation of the table, like it's almost always active within the second rotation of the table in my experience. So it's almost kind of inevitable, like unless someone removes it, that it's going to become active at some point. It's going to have eventually enough ascension counters, or quest counters, sorry.
Right.
Alrighty. You ready for this? My number 1 pick?
Best card.
Alright.
Well, not best, sorry.
Yeah, well, my favorite. So it is Rule of Law. It costs 2 and a white, and it's just one simple line of text. It says each player can't cast more than 1 spell each turn. So this and similar effects are notably also on cards like Arcane Laboratory, Eidolon of Rhetoric, Deafening Silence, and Archon of Emeria that just came out. So this is what I just really love this effect. I love how it changes the nature of the game. The best way to get around this, if you're playing it, is to just plan to put things directly into play, just circumvent the stack so you're not casting stuff. Or you can plan to just interact at instant speed by casting things on your opponent's turns. Sorry. You could also just have a bunch of activated abilities that generate you value in some kind of way, like maybe tap, generate a token, or pump some mana into an activated ability of some permanent you have and generate some value. There are definitely cool, interesting ways to get around this effect to where you can maximize your potential around it. And again, it kind of changes the nature of the game in some really interesting ways. This can definitely backfire, so you need to be careful. Like, if someone's like really far ahead and you just like slam this down, then like sometimes you've just like guaranteed that person who's ahead the win of the game, because even though it's like now 3v1, like the three of you only casting one spell versus their really good spell, so, and then you lose. So you do have to be careful. You do have to be very smart when you're playing this card if you want to win. On the same sort of note, this is kind of a nice effect to have in play when I'm playing against like brand new players, because brand new players will have all these cards in their hand and they're like, oh god, I don't know what order to play these in, I'm so stressed out. And then I play Rule of Law and I'm like, okay, just play one spell. You don't need to worry about like sequencing your spells correctly, just play one spell a turn. And they do, and it kind of helps make the game go a little bit faster, because they have fewer options. So it's kind of nice. There's just a lot of interesting, weird corner case situations like that, and I don't know. I like it a lot. I could probably talk for another 30 minutes about this card. I just love it.
That I like your example, or like I guess that story of, you know, it helps newer players, because I feel like if you are playing the cards at a slower pace, it'll help you realize what to do in other situations when this card's not in play, and you'll learn how to properly sequence your cards.
Yeah, it definitely makes you ask, like, okay, what's the best card in my hand right now that I can play to get me ahead? Like, there might be a bunch of good cards in your hand, but you got to figure out what's the best one in your hand right now.
Right. All right. And now I have two questions for you, just for some clarification.
Yeah.
Let's say this card is in your opening hand. You try and slam it down on the earliest turn that you can, so maybe turn 2 or turn 3. Or do you try and play this card a little later in the game when things are starting to get a little faster?
Oh, that's a good question. So, like, I will typically slam this down if I'm, like, in a mono-white or Boros deck. I'm just looking to, like, slow everyone down to, like, my level. Because that's typically my issue, because I play a Boros deck, and that's typically my issue is, like, everyone's just so much faster than I am that I need to just, like, slow everyone down to, like, my pace using Rule of Law. And then I can typically, like, get around the Rule of Law effect and win. So, like, if I'm in those color identities, I'll just slam it down. But in almost every other situation, I have to be very knowledgeable about the board state, very knowledgeable about what my opponents are playing, like what their commanders are, what the likelihood of like the cards they are have in hand, and just like be very strategic when I put down a Rule of Law effect. It's a little bit more nuanced in those situations. Because again, like I said earlier, you don't want to accidentally like guarantee someone else the win. You want to do it when like you're going to be the one who's going to win like 7 turns later after slamming it down. And that can be really hard to kind of evaluate.
Alright. And then my second question for you, and I think I know the answer, but I want you to just give clarification for anyone listening. But let's say you play Rule of Law for the first spell of that turn. Can you not cast anything else after that, or can you only cast one more thing after that?
Yeah, so like, you... For example, you can play like 5 spells on your turn and then slam down a Rule of Law. That's legal to do. But like, if your first spell of the turn is Rule of Law, you slam it down, then you can't cast another spell on your turn, right? Because Rule of Law was your first spell per turn. Does that make sense?
Right. That's what I thought, but I wanted to kind of give that scenario just in case anyone's listening is like, oh yeah, this is a great stacks piece, but it's the card that you want to play at closer to the end of your turn, or you're not able to do anything else.
Yeah. It's nice when you can play like 5 spells and then like, oh yeah, by the way, Rule of Law, now you guys can go. It's kind of a dick move. But
okay, so that's a pretty good card. It's a card I also run and would say has definitely helped bring down other players when you're playing in mono white to your level. Yeah, I would have included it probably on my list, maybe a little closer.
But I beat
to
you
bottom.
To it.
Well, I want to give you this opportunity because this is the category you like the most.
Yeah.
All right. And my number one pick is Underworld Breach. This is a card I talk about quite a lot, and for good reason. It came out earlier this year with Theros Beyond Death, and I was definitely, like, kind of scratching my head when I first read it, but I don't really care anymore because it's such a great card. It's probably talked about everywhere else, but I'll just enlighten you. So, it's when a red enchantment, each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. Its escape cost is equal to its converted mana cost plus exiling 3 cards from your graveyard. So, the card is, I don't know, 4 mana. You can cast it from your graveyard by exiling another 3 cards from your graveyard. And then at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Underworld Breach. And I like to see this card as a finisher, but it's also really good just for the value. It pairs very nicely with a bunch of cards. Gamble, Lion's Eye Diamond, Wheel of Fortune. Those aren't even, you know, on the budget end necessarily, but still pretty good. Seething Song, or like any kind of ritual card in red, or if you're playing multicolor. Empty the Warrens. And it's the perfect card in my Purphoros deck since I typically want to generate the most amount of mana that I can by setting it up by doing like, alright, I get Gamble to go find Underworld Breach or some other card to combo with Underworld Breach like Wheel of Fortune, where then I can play, you know, Underworld Breach, and then I can even recast Gamble. And the other nice thing about Gamble with this card is, you know, once you have to discard a card, that's just adding cards to the graveyard that you'll inevitably get to exile with. So, cast Gamble, go find Underworld Breach or like Wheel of Fortune, mix up your hand, you'll discard a card, that helps, and Gamble's in there, so you're making your graveyard bigger. Cast Underworld Breach, can recast Gamble if you want, can recast Wheel of Fortune if you cast that.
This sounds complicated.
It really isn't. It's just something that you gotta, like, know the right way. Like, the hard part is making sure that you are able to generate mana. And I think that is a part where you need to pay attention to your sequencing to make sure you have enough mana and cards in your graveyard. So, really, cards like Wheel of Fortune or Faithless Looting, that's a good one. Because you can cast Faithless Looting without having to pay its flashback cost at that point. Shenanigans is a card that I recently added to my deck more so for, like, pet reasons, since it is red and has Dredge, and I do love Dredge, and adds to the graveyard. But yeah, Underworld Breach is already banned in Legacy, I believe.
Really?
It's banned somewhere.
I'm looking it up.
Let me look it up real quick. I will beat you to it. It is banned in Pioneer and Legacy. It's that good, folks. But yeah, it's comparative to Yawgmoth's Will. But the also nice thing is when you cast those cards from your graveyard, you're not putting those cards into exile. You are putting the cards that you are exiling for the escape cost into exile.
Yeah, that's I think what the craziest thing to me is, the fact that they don't exile.
Right, and so you can use cards, you can like sequence it so that you use gamble, whatever, and then, you know, gamble goes back to the graveyard, and now you're like, okay, I need to cast this other card. Let me exile that gamble I just, like, used. So, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, I think it's, like, the only red Dredge card, Shenanigans, which is kind of cute with Underworld Breach. I don't know if they're ever going to make another red Dredge card, but we can hope. It's, like, a 10 out of 10 on the Storm scale, so it's not likely to be reprinted. Or
reused.
Yeah, reused.
And it was a Golgari mechanic, specifically, initially.
Yeah, like, Underworld Breach is just an amazing card. I own it. I use it just, like, for value in some decks, and I am planning to put it into a deck that just, like, abuses the ever-loving fuck out of it, because it's, like, even CEDH viable. And it's just a better Yawgmoth's Will, essentially, because it's only 2 mana instead of 3.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty nutty. It's pretty fucking nutty. I think it's probably one of the best cards of, like, 2020, I think it came out. Yeah, because it was Theros.
It came out earlier this year, so 2020. And, I mean, definitely, it's probably getting a little contention with cards from 2019, because... For me, so far, it ranks as the best card of this year, and maybe in comparison as well as last year. I'd have to think about that a little more, though.
Yeah, but it's, I agree, it's also a pretty awesome card. I think we chose.
What's also nice is, like, right now it is a rare, so it's not, like, a mythic and hard to get. And at this point, too, I still think it's fairly affordable.
Yeah, it's definitely under $25, don't worry.
Well, I'm not worried about that. I'm just saying, like, pick them up now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But yeah, that's our list. That's 10 enchantments that you may know about, you may not know about, but there are pet enchantments.
If you guys have any... like pet enchantments that you guys have, please let us know in the description. I'd honestly love to hear about it. Maybe you guys have something that I am not aware of, and I'll be like, ooh, I should buy that card.
Yeah, for sure. Let us know what your favorite enchantments are. We will be doing more of this. So we'll do a creature one eventually. We'll do an artifact one eventually. Land, yeah. Instant sorcery, maybe planeswalker. But, yeah. So, we are the Wizard Staff Podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Subscribe to our YouTube channel to be entered into the Rhystic City giveaway. Make sure you leave a like and review. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at WizardStaff101. And send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a great night. Peace.
Peace out.